Hello and welcome to the Cancer Discovery Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Landis. In most cases, the molecular ontogeny or evolution of cancer is not well understood. Determining the molecular events and their order that drive cancer is an important goal of current research in the field. I'm joined now by Dr. David Weinstock, who reports in this issue of Cancer Discovery a very rare opportunity to examine the clonal evolution of follicular lymphoma in a pair of sisters. Welcome, Dr. Weinstock.
Thank you.
So you had a pretty unique opportunity here. Could you please tell us a little bit about the clinical course of the two patients you studied?
Absolutely. We were told about this pair of cases by Joe Anton, who's the director of our stem cell transplant program at Dana-Farber. He performed a bone marrow transplant on a woman about 10 years ago who had developed chronic phase chronic myelogenous leukemia, and he utilized bone marrow from her HLA match sister. Both the donor and the recipient did well for the next several years, although the donor did provide donor leukocyte infusions over the next couple of years after the transplant because of molecular relapse of the chronic myelogenous leukemia in the recipient. But both clinically did quite well, and the recipient was in a complete molecular remission until 2009, when within a five-month period, both the donor and the recipient developed follicular lymphoma. Both cases histologically were grade 2 with regions of grade 3, and they had all of the immunophenotypic features one would expect of follicular lymphoma. And this raised the possibility that a lymphoma ancestor was passed from the donor to the recipient and therefore presented this unique opportunity to take a moment in time from the prior donor lymphocyte infusion product and to try to pick apart which mutations were present then and which subsequently developed upon presentation of the lymphoma.
So to do that, you turned to next-generation sequencing. Why did you choose this technique?
Well, I think there are a couple of options. We knew that we wanted to catalog completely what mutations were common between the two lymphomas and which were disparate. And really, next-generation sequencing offers us an unparalleled opportunity to take a comprehensive look at all of the genomic variants that are present, both single nucleotide variants and insertions, deletions. You know, I think considering the cost of that type of approach, exome sequencing made the most sense to us.
So, Dr. Weinstock, you mentioned that the sequencing here was exome sequencing. It seems like you had to perform an unusually ultra-sensitive sequencing in order to be able to analyze these samples properly.
Well, that's exactly right. So we performed exome sequencing on the whole follicular lymphomas, and we were able to identify these cohorts of mutations that were either shared or disparate between the lymphomas. But we knew that within the donor lymphocyte infusion that the lymphoma ancestor was present at a frequency of around 1 in 2,000 cells. And that was based on TACMAN PCR approach we used to measure the frequency of cells harboring the BCL2 IGH rearrangement. And so in order to recover mutations at a statistically significant frequency compared to a background population, we had to sequence very, very deeply. So we PCR amplified across the regions where we knew the mutations were using genomic DNA from the donor lymphocyte infusion. And then we sequenced to extreme depth. So while most exomer whole genome sequencing is in the realm of coverage of 30 to 100 deep, we sequenced to a depth of around 400,000. And this gave us really unparalleled clarity for defining the frequency of mutations that we knew would be present in only about 1 in 2,000 cells, and gave us a really very comfortable statistical significance. And so this step forward, I think, in deep sequencing technology, where one focuses on a very limited portion of the genome at extreme depth, will offer really unparalleled resolution for identifying a variety of different genetic variants that could confer phenotypes ranging from resistance to therapeutic inhibitors to metastasis potential or really any other direct genotype-phenotype correlations.
So what did you find in the samples?
So what we found were that there were 15 mutations that were shared between the two lymphomas, and then a smaller number of mutations that were disparate between the two. We had a hypothesis going into this that we might be able to identify mutations in the same gene, but at different sites that were different between the two lymphomas. And that would very strongly suggest that the two lymphomas within separate hosts had undergone a convergent evolution process where there was pressure for alteration within a specific gene. We didn't exactly identify that. What we did identify instead was a mutation within ARID1A, which is part of the SWI-SNF complex and important in chromatin remodeling, within one of the lymphomas. And within the other lymphoma, we identified a copy number loss such that phenotypically both of the lymphomas had reduced protein expression. So I think confirming our initial hypothesis, there did appear to be selection at that gene in both lymphomas within separate human hosts, which we found to be really quite compelling evidence that there was pressure on that gene during the molecular evolution.
So that implies then that it's necessary to lose this protein in order for lymphoma to develop?
I think in this case, that appears to be the case. There have been extensive sequencing efforts undertaken by other groups, the group in Vancouver, the group at the NIH, and the group at Columbia, and ARID1A has not been reported as a recurrently mutated gene in this disease. It is, however, a recurrently mutated gene in a host of other diseases, most notably subsets of ovarian and endometrial cancer, as well as a recent report in gastric cancer. And other components of the same SWI-SNF complex are mutated in a variety of different epithelial, mesenchymal, and hematologic tumors, suggesting that this complex is quite important. We're in the process of trying to determine whether mutations of ARID1A may occur in particular subsets of lymphoma. And it's worth noting also that there is a recurrent genomic deletion that includes ARID1A in up to 20% of follicular lymphomas. And so while single nucleotide variants or insertion deletions within this gene may be relatively rare, it does appear that inactivation is relatively common.
So what would be the next steps to move forward with the observation that ARID1A may be deleted in lymphoma?
So we're taking a number of complementary approaches. We're expanding our analysis of both the phenotype and genotype associated with ARID1A expression to a larger set of follicular lymphomas. In addition, we're translating some of these particular mutations into in vivo mouse models using pooled open reading frame transplantation experiments. I think that this is an issue that many, many groups who are working in deep sequencing are grappling with, and that is the discovery of a large number of mutations and yet a relatively limited number of functional assays to delineate which of those mutations are the essential drivers. But I think combinations of in vivo assays and epidemiology do at least offer us some insights.
Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Weinstock. I appreciate the chance to discuss this innovative use of next-generation sequencing to examine the evolution of follicular lymphoma.
Thank you.
Please be sure to read this and other exciting papers in the current issue at cancerdiscovery.aacrjournals.org.